Welcome back to HTP Podcast, where we go beyond just strokes and strategy. Our mission is to change the culture of tennis, having one conversation at a time through a more positive and holistic approach. Also, if you guys could subscribe, like, and share these tennis tales, I would greatly appreciate that. And today we have Dale on the podcast, and I am so thrilled to have you on, Dale, because we have a lot of things in common through this holistic lens of tennis, and I definitely want to hear so much about that. But if you can just kind of start first, where you're from, where tennis started for you, and then we can jump in more to the holistic side.
Perfect. Very happy to be here and happy to talk about something near and dear to my heart, which is holistic tennis and heart-centered coaching, which is the work I do. I'm from the East Coast, from Pennsylvania, where I was born and raised, lived there until I went to college. And then after that, I've traveled, spent the longest time of any period in Arizona, 22 years at the Boulders. But mostly I was traveling back and forth to the East and as well South America and coaching, always learning, studying with masters, always on the seeking mission. So tennis came about in an unusual way for me because my dad was a baseball coach. He coached me from the age of 4. So baseball was my primary thing. Interestingly enough, analogy between baseball and tennis is so direct. I used it in holistic coaching, how to stroke a ball, how to receive a ball, how to throw a ball. All of that carries over into tennis because basically that's what you're doing. So I played baseball. I grew up in a baseball diamond and I grew up on a basketball court at a playground almost simultaneously. I played baseball and basketball competitive through high school. Okay. I never played competitive tennis. I just was social in the game. And then one day, my senior year of high school, I was playing baseball and I walked past the tennis courts and I just stopped. I was stunned. I heard this sound that just resonated with my heart of like a tennis ball coming off a wood racket and gut strings. And I said, well, I like that more than hitting a baseball. And then I like to move around more than baseball, which I saw tennis. And so I went to my dad and it became a gap right away. We grew apart because really after my senior high school, I gave up baseball and basketball. I played them in high school. I played them competitively. Now for almost 12 or 13 years, I decided to take 1 year off, completely dedicated just to stroking a tennis ball. Wow. Before I went to college. So I played 8 hours a day for 1 year.
Wow.
No kidding.
That's crazy.
I used all baseball to interact and all basketball to move. So my freshman year of college, I didn't choose to go out for the team because I didn't want to not make it.
Yeah.
So by my sophomore year, I made the team. I played number 6.
Wow.
I was undefeated.
Wow.
And then between my sophomore year and junior year of college, I begged my parents, can I take the summer off between my sophomore and junior year? Can I just live on the tennis courts for 3.5 months and just play from morning till night. Not a doubt. I'll find a way to fund. I'll take out loans. And so I went from number 6 to number 1 my junior year and finished like that. So my way to tennis was fast. I mean, it was fast in the sense of I was open. I practiced unreasonably so. Never talked to any of my teammates about what I was doing. Never. And they go, how are you getting so much better? And so what I used to do is sit on a park bench outside the courts and anybody that came along, anybody, you want to stroke a ball? You want to play? And so I played with everybody and anybody. Mm-hmm. And then I'd work on things, not like trying to win. I'd work on a cross court, top spin, back end. Mm. I'd work on, that's all I did.
Wow.
And fitness you can do outside the court, right? So I did that. And so mentally, I didn't really have any resistance to it. Like when I was playing a competitive collegiate match, everybody on the team used to say, well, you're just having too much fun out there. And I'd go, what? I go, that's how I play sports, you know?
Yeah.
And so that was my jump, not only into college tennis, but that was my jump into holistic tennis. Mm-hmm. You see how they come together because holistic is the whole element of the whole panoramic part of it, which is playfulness or joyfulness in body, in mind, and in spirit. Spirit gets the lack of attention because it's kind of confusing. It's almost embodied as, well, spiritual. I go, well, spiritual, just think of it as your heart or maybe your soul if you're willing to take that next step. So I would say mind, body, heart. I would say mind, body, soul, mind, body, spirit. but all connected, because mm-hmm. the reality of holistic is you can't separate the three.
Yes.
What impacts one impacts the other. And that's a whole nother podcast and a whole nother conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So that's my start into tennis. That's my start into holistic work. And it's been my whole life. The interesting thing about tennis for me, after I graduated, it was almost like an omen. A bird flew to me and said, you played your last match. You played your last competitive tennis. It's almost like I didn't want to anymore. Mm. I wanted to coach. I wanted to learn more.
Yeah.
I didn't want to get out in the court and do what you kind of do to prove yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to be a better coach if I prove myself more in competition. I went through that.
Yeah.
In two other sports and then in the last 5 years in competitive tennis. So I'm kind of like, okay, I want to coach the game. That's where my passion led me. And that was because after my senior year, right before I moved, I coached kids at the country club nearby where I grew up. And yeah. I fell in love with coaching kids like day one, This is a joy. I'm coaching the game I love with kids. Who wouldn't want to do that?
Absolutely. Really? Yeah.
You know? Okay.
Yes.
So that's pretty much puts that all together.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And with the holistic side, how are you incorporating that with what you do today?
Well, what I do today is even more passionate than what I did almost, believe it or not, you know, 4.5 decades ago,
mm-hmm.
because it just continues to grow. When you embrace it holistically, imagine this big garden that I've seeded, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And now it's all growing.
Yeah.
You know, the fruits, the veggies, the flowers, they're all growing. I get to pick from this one today, that one today. And so holistically, when you talk about mind, body, and spirit, you're talking about holistically. When you're talking about wholesomeness, which is a really big, big part of the equation, is more like the web of life. Everything's connected. So I have this big web of life, right?
Yeah.
The whole big potpourri to like pick from. I mentioned that I'm currently writing a book, and I won't get into that, but at the point, we'll talk about that maybe hopefully someday. It's kind of like when you look at it that way, you start to see that it's all about really gaining a sense of wisdom, a sense of deeper understanding about things so you can put them, and that takes time. So holistic coaching takes more time to cultivate, because you're not coming out like, well, this is what I was learned and I'm just going to regurgitate what I learned, which
yeah.
is pretty much, it's kind of common. I don't want to step on anybody's toes, but it's kind of common to just
yeah.
say, well, this is where I learned, so this is what you're going to learn from me.
Yeah.
A holistic is totally a different way. It's more spontaneous and it's more in the moment, because you know what needs to be done at that moment. And there's an expression that I use today that I used in coaching for most of my life, which is just make sure you're putting first things first. And so I say to the student, you know, first things first. And so I have no agenda. I have no plan. I have no platform. Do you think I still don't know my subject? You think I still don't have a purpose? And they would at first, and then they started to understand that, like, he's more in the moment. He feels me. He's intuiting me. He's understanding more what I need now, mm-hmm. not what he wants for me or she wants for me,
yes.
but what I need now. And that's the biggest part of generating, how would I say, powerful action and powerful commitment at the moment. Because you're tuning in to what's coming through you, as well as you're feeling what's coming through them.
Yes.
They don't want to do cross-court forehands today. They don't. Oh, but you had your mindset on, we're going to work on cross-court forehands and backhand. You had
yeah.
your mindset on that.
Yeah.
And I go, well, what set your mind? Well, maybe a week ago practice or something. But 7 days later is totally different. They're coming now with a different feeling in their mind and body, with different energy, with a different desire, because they played this week and they didn't serve well and they couldn't return well. And then all of a sudden you're just standing there with them or what, sitting there with them, and you say, what's going on with you? And they go, oh, I'm a little bit bummed out about, you know, how I played this week. And I go, what are you bummed out about? And they go, I just couldn't serve very well. And my return was off. And I said, that's really important to you right now, isn't it? And they go, it really is. I need to focus on that a little bit. I go, yeah, I feel that. And so let's do it. And then all of a sudden I'm completely with them and they're completely connected with me.
Yeah.
And then practice becomes eventful.
Yes.
Not normal routine. See you next week.
Yes.
And we'll work on this next week. Maybe we won't work on this next week. So yeah. I don't plant that seed. And so you know how when you're at practice and there's a break in the action and you're especially with kids and you're picking up balls or you're getting a drink. And then there's either the private student or the kids around you. Well, what are we going to do next? And I would always go, I don't know. And they'd always go, he doesn't know. But then they would kind of laugh at that because we'd get together, we'd walk out in the court. All of a sudden, I would have the feel for the moment.
Yeah.
You know, because if I would have said this and then we broke, I mean, it's like, once again, I'm exercising like a program. Mm. It doesn't mean that I'm not organized. It doesn't mean that I'm just flying by my britches, so to speak. It just means I'm more present.
Yeah.
Well, how about that?
Yeah.
Like more present than coming with a preconceived notion of what should be done.
Yes.
You know, and I remember, I'll tell you a little quick story about that. I loved watching Roger, especially early on when he still had his stuff going on. He was young, he was getting experience. And then as he matured, you just saw him like really mellow and stuff like that. I had some conversations with other pros about, you know, you should be setting the point up. You should be playing more constructively. And I would say, like, how do you mean? And they go, well, you know, 2 cross court, 3 cross court, 1 down the line or whatever. We get into all these kind of things. And I said, you think Federer plays like that? And they go, you know, that kind of introduced another thing.
Yeah.
I said, I can assure you he doesn't play like that. And what do you mean? What do you know? You don't know him. I go, well, I watched him a lot, both live and on TV. And then one day I heard a BBC interview.
Yeah.
And the BBC is kind of insightful. They kind of go deeper in an interview with a tennis player. They want to get more information rather than talk about who's he dating right now, who's she dating right now, you know, whatever. Okay. So the commentator says, you played some incredible points today, Roger. How did you construct those points? And there was a pause. And then Federer said, what do you mean? I construct a point. He said, I don't construct anything. He said, I just go with what's happening at the moment. I don't know what they're going to do. So based on the ball that I receive and based on the situation I'm in at the moment, there I go.
Yeah.
And when I heard that, I was like, almost like wanting to get down on my hands and knees and pray because that revealed such a truth of his genius.
Yeah.
He was more in the flow.
I was just about to say that, more in flow.
More in flow.
Yeah.
And that takes the mystique out of flow, because a good way to look at flow, and without making it religious, is call it the holy flow. It's divine. It's coming to you. You're in the flow.
Yeah.
Like my favorite basketball player of all time was Michael Jordan. Michael was always in the flow. And then came along a guy named Kobe Bryant, who even personified that as much. But to be that way is to be really focused and present and hearing and feeling and sensing intuitively what is calling to be done at the moment. So to take the mystique out of flow, like, well, how do you know flow? That's how you take it out. You just become more present to the flow. Just like if you and I went out for a walk and we're walking along a river, when we'd watch the flow and we realize the river's flowing with the contours of what's it's above and what it's under and bordered by. And so it's just going, it's weaving, slowing, speeding, just doing everything with the flow is all comes from that, right?
Yeah.
So if, when you understand that, that's the same as for us when we're hiking up a trail, up a mountain or out in the desert or playing a tennis match, go with the flow. And you say to somebody, but they don't quite, if it's not explained and it's not practiced, then it's hard to expect them to get that. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, go with the flow. You mean just do anything I want? No, not anything you.
Yeah.
Not anything you want. You're going with what the moment is bringing to you.
Absolutely. And yeah, so, like he said, it's definitely about being in present. And, you know, it's funny too about with being in the flow is like, you know, you have people who will come to you, be like, how do I get into the flow? Like, it's not something so much that is like action oriented. It's actually like the opposite of taking action. Yes, obviously split stepping and going forward, you're taking action, but it's not a thought that you are taking action to do. It's like you're saying, it's being in the present moment and allowing things to actually, so you can receive more of what's happening and take that information in as well. So yeah, I love what you're saying, Dale. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. The way to do that, a fun way to do that is take them out to the river and push them in and say, go with the flow. Okay, well, they'll get that. They'll get that the right way. In other words, if you don't go with the flow in the river, you may drown or you may get hurt. Okay.
Yeah.
And so in life, it's kind of pretty similar parallel, you know, that if you're forcing against the flow, you're probably going to get beat up. You're going to have a higher risk of getting injured.
Yes.
You're going to have more emotional trauma, probably, because you're forcing something to happen rather than allowing yourself to be part of what is going on. Because we're humans, we have an amazing capacity. One is to adapt and the other is to be resilient. And so to come back from that, if we go with the flow, we can adapt. And then we can weather the storm and come back. You know, in other words, we survive and resiliency allows us to come back. Kids are really good at that. Like what seems like a heartfelt life disappointment as a loss when they're 15, the next day they're ready to play. You know what I mean? It's almost like they lost their life in the world, but the next day they're ready to play.
Yeah.
Well, that's resiliency. And hopefully they adapt a little bit because they learn what happened yesterday. And when they come back today, that's not going to be the case for them anymore.
Yeah.
And so that's a beautiful part of our humanness when we're more open. I think open's the word.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely being more open. And, you know, what you are doing through Holistic Tennis and how I want to share it with the world through my podcast, it will absolutely help people. And I think too, sometimes with tennis and certain systems, it's like an old dinosaur that people are so like, oh, because this worked, we have to do it this way and da 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 da. And it's like, again, they're not in that flow of being able to adapt as people evolve and change. I really love what you're doing, Dale. I definitely want you to come back on the podcast again and we can share more of your teachings, right? You know, the tennis game needs it. Finally, people are sharing more about the mental health side. And a big part of that is because they're not having that holistic approach. And like you said, even with injuries too. I mean, I battled with my own and exactly like you said, it's because I wasn't adapting. I wasn't allowing things to happen. I was always trying to force it. And so then the body breaks down. And also, just even the fact of like listening to your body, and that is the holistic approach, which can sound so foreign to tennis players and tennis coaches, but it's actually not as hard and abstract as people think. And it just takes a little more pause and stillness and slowing down for those things to happen. But a lot of the time, that's what people struggle with, is that initial, you know, pause, that initial step just to slow down. So Dale, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. If you guys like these tennis tales, please like, share, and subscribe.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to come back.
Awesome.
Just remember, old dinosaurs went extinct.